Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Glad to have you all with us. If you're listening in real time on this Monday afternoon, I hope you all had a wonderful Easter, or perhaps you were celebrating the first couple of nights of Passover. One way or the other, I hope it was great. And many of you out there across the state are in the first day of spring break. And in fact, Howard Franklin is with us today, Democratic strategist. He is one of two panelists today who've brought a guest because of the holiday. Tell us who you've got with you today, Howard.
I appreciate that, Bill. My second grader, Kingston, Kingston Roberts, is here, hanging out in the studio and listening in.
All right, Kingston, we're glad to have you here. And Jackie Cushman, Republican columnist, conservative columnist, blogger. Your son isn't on spring break, but he does have the day off, and you brought him in today. Who did you bring with you?
I'm thrilled to have Robert Cushman here today. My son, he's in 10th grade, and he does not have spring break because spring break, he spent down at the Capitol, down at the Dome, interning. So he's had a full enjoyment of the political season during his time off of school.
And we got Jim Galloway a chance to ask him. Of course, as an intern, he got a chance to weigh in, write some of the legislation that they were working on. Isn't that what you said, Jackie?
I think it was running errands.
Oh, that's right. I got it wrong.
I distinctly remember Casey Cagle thanking him for catching that comma. Yes.
That is, of course, Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal Constitution, who you read on Wednesdays and Sundays and see in the Political Insider blog as part of Politically Georgia at MyAJC. And, excuse me, I am losing it. Julianne Thompson, who is a Republican consultant, has been active in Republican state politics here for many years. Thank you for being here today, Julianne.
Thank you for having me.
It's spring break for you, too, isn't it?
It is spring break. I left my son at home. I guess I probably should have brought him.
Well, there's time. We'd love to have him here.
We like free range kids, too.
A couple of announcements. One, remember, of course, that you can watch us, if you're so inclined, on Facebook Live. Just go to the GPB News Facebook page. And when you do that and get a chance to see us in the radio studio, leave comments. We love seeing what you have to say as you're watching the show. Of course, you can also communicate with us and contribute to the show by tweeting us at PoliticsGPB. Last announcement, Jim, I promise that we'll get to the topics at hand. We're going to be in Macon, a week from Thursday. I want to make sure we say that again. We'd love to have people come on down. We'll be there at the Mercer School of Medicine Auditorium on Thursday night, April 12th, 7 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to have the audience. It's free. Go to gpb.org/community, and you'll get information on how you can just sign up to have a reservation to be there.
Oh, yeah, you got to be there.
Yeah, we're excited about that. All right, enough of the announcements. Let's get right down to it. I know that Julianne was live in the audience. Jackie was watching on a web site, I believe. And Jim, you and I didn't get to see it, and apparently you didn't either. But we certainly were reading the news out of the Republican gubernatorial debate. The first time seven candidates have all been on the same stage. Our colleague Greg Bluestein was the moderator. And I think it's worth spending a little time talking about it because this is the first debate. This comes a day, basically 2 days after the session ended. And there were issues, things that happened during the session that we saw in the Republican debate Saturday night, and they're going to play out throughout the campaign.
Right, right. When in a political campaign, you're always hesitant to put too much reliance on polls and such to tell you who's ahead and who's not ahead. I've always liked to depend on behavior of candidates. And it was clear by the way they went after Casey Cagle that they view him as the front runner. What may be more interesting is that the number two target was Hunter Hill, mm-hmm. Former state senator out of Buckhead, who is kind of making a surprise surge in this contest.
Julianne, you were there in the hall, so tell us what your observations were of the way things unfolded and what struck you as being important, perhaps.
Well, I think that your observations were very accurate. There were a lot of attacks of the lieutenant governor, many of them from Michael Williams. I would say the vast majority of them were from Michael Williams.
This is the senator from Cumming.
The senator from Cumming, yes. But the others did some attacking as well. I found the fact that everyone's second choice for attacking seemed to be Hunter Hill. You're correct about that. But if you look at some recent polling numbers, you'll see that he is rising, and he has become I don't want to say that the lieutenant governor is not a conservative, but among party people, they're calling him a conservative alternative. And you do see a lot of the conservative base rallying around him at this time. Now, how that's going to play out over the next month or so, it remains to be seen. But right now, he is gaining a lot of momentum.
Hunter Hill.
And that Hunter Hill is gaining a lot of momentum, and that was very evident in the debate.
Now, the others in the race, we have Secretary of State Brian Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
We have
businessman Clay Tippins.
And that kind of rounds out the majority of the major candidates. I would mention that Hunter Hill and Clay Tippins both have significant military experience, which can be appealing in a
Very
Republican
true.
Primary.
And they're both capitalizing on it in their advertising.
Jackie, you watched. Was there anything? Did you see anything that led you to understand why Hunter Hill may be surging to some extent? Anything about his messaging, his presentation? And if not that, what were your thoughts as you watched it unfold?
So a couple of thoughts. First, globally, and again, I wasn't at the location. I just watched it online. There seemed to be really a lack of energy, whether that was from the actual arena or from the candidates themselves. I really can't tell, but there wasn't a lot of energy that I could see. They all appeared to be very serious, which I think may be helpful for a, quote, debate. But quite frankly, none of the candidates were appealing from a Ronald Reagan, a Bill Clinton, I understand who you are and I want to help you perspective. And
I think a sense of optimism?
Just a sense of I care about you. Just a pleasant someone. So let me back up. So one of the things and I'm glad Robert's here, actually, because he'll remember this. During the presidential campaign, when my dad debated extensively, he would keep on the podium, not sheets of notes of things to do. He would keep a little short sheet that would say, slow down. Clearly, I have that problem, too. And then he would say, smile. And those were actually the two things that both Robert and Maggie, my children, would tell him over and over again. Because even if you have great information, if you're not approachable and people don't like you, it's very hard to get elected.
Yeah, let's remind people. let me just interrupt long enough to say, for people who don't realize, your dad, of course, is Newt Gingrich. Go ahead.
Right. So that's kind of my first takeaway. And secondarily, I mean, I've seen polls. I haven't seen the breakdown of the polls. I've seen like little slices. I don't know if they're likely voters or just people that happen to be registered, which makes a huge difference in the primary. So I do think there, you know, Hunter has increased, but he's increased from 3. So really, Casey's on top. Kemp's number 2. And the question becomes, it'll probably go to a runoff. And will Casey stay on top? Maybe. And will Kemp, Tippins, or Hunter Hill be number 2? So really, they're coming down to how do you navigate that field to make sure that you're in the number 2 slot? Because more than likely, no one's going to get past 50.
That's exactly right. I think we are in route to a runoff. But I would say, looking at this, it reminds me a little bit reminiscent of the last Atlanta mayor's race where we had 13, 14 people on the ballot. The last Republican race for the nomination for president in 2016, we had 16, 17 Republicans when it was all said and done. When you have this many, it's hard for someone to strike out with a message that really just cuts through all the other noise. And so you've got folks playing to their base, saying, if I can cobble together, you know, these consistent and sure to show up segments of the Republican base, then maybe I can make that runoff spot. Now, to me, that's what this feels like more than an actual Morning in America type of campaign.
Yeah, and to your point, Bill, about the connection between this and the close of the legislature. Mm-hmm. I mean, Casey Cagle actually had a very good session. A lot of people criticized him a few weeks ago over the NRA Delta flap.
Yep.
But this session has closed out with with some really good stuff happening for Republicans, like Nathan Deal's decision to throw an extra $167 million to finally fully fund QBE. That is a and kind of erase the Great Recession deficit. That takes a huge weapon away from Democrats. You didn't have any knockdown, dragout, splitting fights over religious liberty. Those were they were handled very carefully. And in the final days, Cagle actually ruled shut out one fight that was ready to break out on the floor over SB 375, the adoption bill.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, Julianne, I think to Jim's point, I wanted to get your take on this. Clearly, Cagle was under attack. I didn't watch it live. I did watch most of it over the weekend after it was while it was posted still. And there were a lot of attempts by the other candidates to talk about their own fiscal conservatism, talk about they want to, of course, continue the balanced budget. The notion of having an argument about the balanced budget is a little absurd considering it's required by state statute. But Casey Cagle has the biggest ace in the hole on that one. They cut taxes for everyone in Georgia when they got the state in conformity with the new federal tax law. That's going to be that's a very big selling point.
Well, it is a big selling point, but I think that it was explained pretty well at the debate as to how that came about. Casey Cagle is leading the others by about 20 points or so. Mm-hmm. But the difference for a second, whether Kemp is in second or whether it's Hill or whether it's Tippins, the difference between the three is only a point. So it's negligible to really try to figure out who is actually in second place right now. It's a clearly competitive race. And as far as the energy or lack thereof of the debate, I do agree. There was a lack of energy in this particular debate that I didn't notice in the other debates. However, they have done this same format in a Republican Party approved debate setting a half a dozen times. So, and a lot of times it's been to the same audience. So I'm sure they're ready for something different, maybe a slightly different format where they can actually ask each other questions.
And I do think now the session's over, I mean, you had both, Cagle was tied up. Now the session's over and they can kind of go back out and campaign and raise money. You're going to see a whole change of tenor and a level of energy, I think, over the next few weeks. And so I think there are a couple of things to think about. One, we're going to have a runoff more than likely, right? So Cagle would love to not have a runoff because then he would be in the, right? That's his hope.
That's the hope.
So everybody else is hoping that they're in the runoff with him. And so it comes down to one, is there any new news that we don't know of, right? So is anything that splashed that we have no clue about? I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And then number two, it really depends on momentum. And I think one of the things that Kemp has done a really good job with, and he referred to it several times in the debate, which I don't blame him, is he's visited every county in Georgia. I mean, he's made sure that he's everywhere and that he knows people in all around Georgia. And in the end, this is a race for governor of Georgia. And I think it's very hard to win this race for anybody, Republican or Democrat, if you're running inside Atlanta.
And Kemp has focused on almost singularly on one message, and that is illegal immigration.
Yeah, and boy, in this debate, his rhetoric, he ratcheted up his rhetoric.
It was always accompanied by the word criminal.
Criminal. And he's been saying that before, but it was interesting to actually watch it live unfold in the middle of an actual debate setting. And I wonder, Howard, there were two positions taken Saturday night that are probably in a primary, a GOP primary. Obviously, moving to the right is important. We get that. But one is Brian Kemp with his very hard rhetoric about undocumented immigrants. Hunter Hill talked about the fact, and I throw this out to all of you, but Howard, let me start with you, because you're going to have Democratic candidates going to run against one of these people. Hill wants to eliminate the state income tax. We know that. And one of the ways he said Saturday night that his means of paying for the elimination of the income tax will be to slash spending to social service programs such as, quote, welfare, food stamps, the higher education bureaucracy, Medicaid reform. The reason we do that is because we love people. The bottom line is government is not delivering the results in helping these broken people. That strikes me as something he's going to have to explain more clearly. But just on the surface, it's troubling. It's troubling for Republicans, I would think.
I would think so. I think it's, you know, you say he's going to have to explain it more clearly. I think he's going to have to understand it more clearly and the interplay between all the federal dollars that support so much of what he's pointing at before he can talk about state dollars and how he wants to slash those, acknowledging he has no control over those state dollars. But to that point, I agree with Jackie. I think 12 years as lieutenant governor is a big head start. It's going to be hard to be one of 56 like Brian or like Hunter to try to catch up with the guy who spent 12 years visiting all the states with this ceremony.
Julianne, I did detect a slightly sour look in my direction when I made those comments about Hunter Hill. So please take an opportunity to respond.
No.
That's fine.
I think I was going to mention the fact that I think that where Brian Kemp is in a really good place is that it doesn't matter which Republican that I talk to and which camp they're in, whether they're in Casey's camp or where they're in the people that are forming a coalition to support Hunter Hill. Brian is in a good place because he is, at this point, everybody's second choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes Brian Kemp. And at the debate the other day, there was not one subject matter. There was not one interaction between the candidates that Brian attacked any of the other candidates. He came across as a gentleman. And one thing that I heard from everyone out in the hallway afterwards was, you know, that Brian Kemp is just a great guy.
Is he your candidate? I mean, if we're going to be transparent.
Honestly.
You don't know yet?
To be transparent, I don't know who I'm going to vote for yet. Okay. I'm still waiting to hear my catchphrases and how they feel about them.
All right, so
I think real quick, I do think that Clay Tippins is interesting just because he's the one that has obviously, you know, the least out of the major candidates, the least political experience. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see him try to get his feet under him to see if he can clearly articulate his message. If he can figure that out and deliver that with a smile, I think he's actually got a shot at being number two. But he's got to really work on delivering a message in which is very clear and he can articulate to everybody.
Let me ask you, you two who watched the entire debate, Bill, maybe you got it too, is the last big debate of GOP candidates, we found out that none of them liked the hands-free driving bill, which ended up passing the Senate. Did that come up? Did that come up at all? I would just find that to be a very, very hard topic to attack somebody on. Or to rail against in a primary,
even if it's a Republican one. It didn't come up, and I do agree that Clay Tippins it definitely has a lot of things going for him, being an outsider and also having the money to run a lot of television ads. That is his strong point, is his ability to get on TV. But he is going to have to work on retail politics. And he is going to have to smile more because that's a problem right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's about smile more, visit a lot of places, and work yourself to death. I mean,
that's right.
the things you have to do.
I'm trying to remember your dad smiling during his any of his campaigns. Or maybe it was just the way he responded to reporters.
No, that was only to you, Bill, okay? That wasn't to everybody. That was just to you.
I can remember him running down that checklist and then smiling. He did
in the presidential party. He finally did as a grandfather.
By the way, Jackie, shout out to you. Angela Hayes is watching on Facebook Live, and she says, thanks to you for reminding all of us that rural areas will also be voting for governor. Howard, let's talk for a minute about what came out of the legislative session that might be useful for Stacey Evans and Stacey Abrams as they move through the primary.
Well, I guess I should start, since you've already mentioned it, with what won't be useful. And I think, obviously, folks are cheering this. I think State Senator Jason Carter, who was Democratic nominee for governor in 2014, took to Twitter and congratulated Governor Deal on fully funding quality basic education. I think everyone acknowledges there's still lots of work to be done, but I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. Everyone agrees. I would say where the states are going to focus on what hasn't actually happened. You know, whether it's the Predator bill, whether it was what's going to happen, the details around the transit governance bill and how that ultimately all unfolds. Obviously, the city of Eagles Landing struck a chord with a lot of folks who care about local control, don't want to see power usurped from the state legislature to local folks. Cannabis oil, something that we're going to talk about, I think, a little bit later with Alan Peake, et cetera. So I think there's a lot every year that we think, you know, should get done and doesn't get done because of the politics, because of the time rhyme, but plenty to talk about, I would say, for Democrats.
You know, Bill, it's hard to overestimate the impact that that fully funding QBE is going to have, especially when you take into account what happened in West Virginia, what's happening in Oklahoma right now, and what might soon be happening in Arizona, with teachers getting so fed up with low pay and poor treatment that they're going on strike. And in essence, what they're doing is they're activating their own political base in a really important way that could have impact on elections in those states.
So that said, Jim, where do you think the Democratic race between Abrams and Evans stands as of the beginning of the first week without a legislative session? Where are we heading in this race?
Okay, well, number one, I think you have to concede that Stacey Abrams is probably the presumed front runner, and then Stacey Evans hasn't shown her hand yet competitively yet. What strikes me is how many people are holding back in this campaign. I mean, you haven't heard from Mayor Bottoms, former Mayor Kasim Reed. You haven't heard from Shirley Franklin or Michael Thurman yet, and that's very important. But as far as issues, if I were a Democratic candidate for governor and looking at issues, clearly Medicaid expansion is something that didn't happen. The Republican efforts to patch up healthcare in rural Georgia were simply that patches. And I think I had a conversation with the CEO of the Georgia Chamber a week or so ago, and when he said it's imperative that candidates be faced with the topic of Medicaid waivers this primary.
Howard, where do you see? I mean, Jim makes a very important point here. We've got a lot of people sitting on the sidelines right now. Why?
I think.
Are you committed?
I have not committed to either candidate. And I've worked for both the Stacey's.
Right.
And I would tell you a big part of that, I think, is because they're both really attractive and impressive candidates, right? You got two young women who have proven themselves in the state legislature, shown themselves capable in business, and built powerful, potent political coalitions that we're seeing, you know, take to the streets. I think, to the point you made earlier, you're right. Neither's really shown their hands just yet. And I think really the bigger impetus to kind of stay out of this race, or for folks that haven't jumped in yet, is because they see, you know, kind of this storm forming on the other end of the ballot, right? They're more concerned with how Republicans are going to present themselves. I think that not even the latest, but the Delta flap in particular gave a lot of Democrats who would otherwise seen Casey Cagle as a relatively moderate choice and a moderate option, maybe show some true colors and maybe, you know, get them to come off the sidelines a little bit differently. But I agree. We're a weekend out of the session. I think in the next, you know, 6-7 weeks, we'll certainly see folks come off the sidelines. And I know that the campaigns are working hard to get surrogates and others out there on the endorsement trail.
All right, let's do this. Thank you for that. Let's take a break, by the way. We have people, Olivia Reingold says, watching on Facebook Live from Austell, Rabun County, Albany, Darien, any number of cities around the state. We really are a statewide show, and it's always wonderful to hear where you are listening to us or watching us. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jim Galloway had an intriguing story in the AJC the other day about blatantly illegal activity going on under the gold dome.
A drug ring.
And we're going to talk about that right after the break.
Right now, you have a chance to win a St. Simons Island getaway for two at the King and Prince Beach and Golf Resort and support GPB at the same time. Your online contribution at gpb.org will also inspire others to join you in support of GPB during our spring fun drive. You'll also enter our drawing to win this vacation for two, including a 3-night oceanfront stay, meals, and golf. Don't wait. Go to gpb.org now to do your part, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Julianne Thompson just telling a story about somebody coming up to you and saying they listened to you on Political Rewind.
He did. He did. He came up to me at the Mike Pence event and said that he listens to the show regularly, and he recognized my name from the show.
Well, that's good. That's what we're hoping for.
Yes.
Julianne Thompson, Jackie Gingrich Cushman, Howard Franklin, and Jim Galloway. Jim, not a whole lot to do with this, but it's fabulously interesting. Alan Peake from Macon, state rep, who's now finished his final session. He's retiring from that job. Told you something that he's been doing. He is the biggest proponent of medical marijuana in the legislature. He's been tireless and fearless. And it is, although there are conditions that can be used to that people can get, can be treated with cannabis oil legally, you can't get it legally from anywhere.
You can't legally import it into Georgia.
So
it
what's is, Peake been doing?
He has been acting as a drug mule working out of the state capitol. He was exiting and it was finally safe for him to discuss the topic, but basically, cannabis oil, it is legal under state law. It's legal to possess it as long as you also hold a registry card, that says you have a condition that can be helped by it. There's a long list that the legislature keeps adding to. You have to have a physician's recommendation, but you cannot bring it into the state legally. So every so often, maybe once every month, maybe once every few weeks, there is an illegal drug delivery in the state capitol. And then, it's in a Kroger bag or in a Panera bread bag or some such thing. And Peake takes these vials home to Macon and he starts distributing them to families who can't afford it. He paid for this out of his own pocket.
And says he will continue.
And he's giving away for free.
And giving it away for free.
We should point out, you said the important thing there. This is, people aren't bringing in like weed. This is cannabis.
This is low.
This is oil.
Low THC cannabis oil.
Julianne, when you hear something like that, does it offend your conservative sensibilities?
Absolutely not. My sister died on July 31st, 2012. It was actually primary election day in 2012, and she did not die of cancer. She died of the effects of chemotherapy that was treating her, was supposedly treating her cancer. When I watched her suffer, I watched what she went through. There is nothing, and I'm going to draw a lot of controversy by saying this, but there is nothing that I would not have done to try to alleviate her pain and her suffering and to try to find whatever type of cure that I could to save her. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that. But there is absolutely nothing about trying to help someone else with something like a low THC cannabidiol that we're talking about here when we are using FDA-approved drugs whose side effects are worse than the conditions that they actually treat.
Jackie, it typically... certainly with the administration in Washington right now and Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, there is a certain amount of demonizing of marijuana, certainly as a recreational drug. But Jeff Sessions seems to believe that marijuana in any form is a gateway to further drug use. Your take on all that?
Well, good, Julian. I mean, I'm very sorry about your sister. My mother stayed with us when she was going through her cancer treatment, and she took chemotherapy for a long time. And I understand how hard it is to watch someone you love go through that. I think what this reminds us of is we need to be careful. I mean, if you're allowed to have that drug in your possession, which you are in Georgia, you need to also think about how do you get it in your possession, right? So you need to make sure that the bills actually reflect reality. And not, force him into doing something like this, which really doesn't make any sense.
Well, Peake was pretty darn critical when it came to Republican members of Congress from Georgia. He said Johnny Isaacson, who had supported him in his efforts. Of course, Isaacson has Parkinson's disease, and it's one of the ones treatable by with cannabis oil. But he said David Perdue and the rest of the congressional, the House members from Georgia were absent in this fight.
Well, okay, but I understand the concerns about what's happening in Washington, but right here in Georgia, Howard, and because this takes us back to the governor's race question, really, Governor Deal, who in many ways became pretty progressive in terms of the policies that he embraced during the latter part of his tenure as governor, for sure, he's the one who's held the line against some form of legal manufacturing here in Georgia. There are some concerns about whether if you do it at a university, do they risk losing federal funding?
That's right.
But nevertheless, is an issue that could be relevant to the governor's race. Yeah. What is the next governor going to do?
That's a great question. I think you lose some of it's harder to make the argument that you're waiting on the federal government to figure out how they're going to classify this drug, Schedule One or otherwise, when you've got a party that has near constitutional majorities in the state House and the state Senate here, obviously in all the constitutional offices. And you've got basically the exact same thing in Washington. So I think the expectation is that these governments, these states and the Fed will get on the same page and figure out how to deliver some help to people who obviously need it. I don't think there's any... unlike some of the other trumped up, concerns like false voting or voter fraud, I don't think there's any real concern that producing cannabis oil here, low THC cannabis oil here, is going to lead to some endemic that the state isn't prepared for. And I'm waiting to see someone answer the clarion call as well. It hasn't been any real discussion about how we're going to address this.
All right. We have a tweet from Catherine Cummings, who says we need to make pain management especially those that aren't addictive, available to physicians and patients. Kudos to Alan Peake and Julianne.
But Bill, onto that point, I think, and just to be fair to those resisting this in the state legislature and even in Congress, we went through a really bad spell with pain clinics in Georgia when opioids first came out, and you found pain clinics on every street corner, and there's some fear of that.
Yeah. Okay. We'll watch how that unfolds. Alan Peake goes back to the private sector. Is there going to be a champion to take his place in the legislature starting next session? We don't know the answer to that, do we?
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
David Clark is looking like a real hero on the issue.
But he's going to have to find a better suit before he becomes a superhero.
David Clark, tell everybody what you mean by
all
that.
Right, okay,
the signy die suit.
The last people get a little silly on signy die, and David Clark dressed it up, and he had an Uncle Sam suit.
A blue blazer with stars that look like stars from the American flag, white, silver stars, and red slacks.
Yes, and he was wearing this when he really came down very, very hard on Casey Cagle and Renee Underman in the Senate for blocking his bill to expand the list of treatments that can be can be used with cannabis oil. It's just it was a little jarring. A serious speech in an unserious suit. It just didn't go over well.
All right. Former President Jimmy Carter was on the Stephen Colbert Show. I believe it was Friday night or Thursday night. Friday night, Galloway tells me. And here's just a little of his exchange with Colbert.
A lot of people will release a book as a trial balloon before they run for president.
Yes. I've heard about that, yeah.
Is there any chance you're running in 2020? Because... We could use a nice guy in the Oval Office.
I think there's an age limit.
Does America want kind of a jerk as president?
Apparently, from his recent election, yeah. I never knew it before.
What do you think it takes to be president? What's the one of quality that it requires to be a good president?
I used to think it was to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. But I've changed my mind lately.
You know, Jackie, President Carter has been, He has at times been critical of the policies of presidents who followed him in office. No question about that. He's been a nuisance to some of them, given the positions he's taken. But I'm trying to remember a time when he has personalized his criticisms the way he did the other night. And he was having fun on the Colbert show. But it was jarring to hear him talk about the president as a jerk, wasn't it?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think, first of all, to see Jimmy Carter still on stage at 93, I think is just amazing. I mean, he is a, you know, he was Georgia's first president. He's, I mean, we'll have more later, I'm sure, right? He's an amazing man. He's actually a personal friend of my husband's grandfather was ambassador to Australia under Jimmy Carter. So we have ties on both sides of the aisle. And he's met my son and my daughter. Lovely man, just unbelievably, just wonderful. But I think a couple of things. One is you can tell he's really relaxed. He's older now. He can pretty much say what he wants. He's a man of great faith. And even when he says things that were, I think, maybe jarring in their sentence structure, he did it with a lot of love. I mean, he did it very sweet and very nicely.
Very graceful. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, he's got a lot of love in his heart. And I think that comes through very often. I think what's also interesting is he talks about the personality. And even if you disagree with Jimmy Carter from a political standpoint, you got to love him, right? He's just a lovable person. He's a good guy. But if you look at his policies when he was president, the area that he fell short of, which really, I think, led to Reagan, is foreign policy. And, you know, he was totally, you know, he came from Georgia to go to the national stage. He had a lot of issues with foreign policy. And then he had the whole speech about, you know, the malaise speech about how we're in troubled times. So I think it's a little bit of a different world than he was in earlier.
But he never used the word malaise.
Yeah, true.
But think of the juxtaposition. And I wish Colbert had drawn it out a little bit more. But what was the phrase that Jimmy Carter used to get elected? I will never tell you a lie.
I will never lie to you. That's right. That's exactly right. Howard, I thought another thing that was really fascinating should give you a heart as a Democrat. The audience went wild. He was
there to
promote his book, by the way, called Faith. That's what the reference was that Colbert made. You know, this reminds me of George W. Bush saying in the era of Trump, you're really missing me, aren't you?
That's right.
Very similar.
No, it's, you know, I think if you're leading into the 2020 presidential election on the Democratic side, I think it's wide open. I mean, it might be wide open on the Republican side, too, for all we know. But right now, I think there's a lot of folks figuring out where they stand and what they stand for and how they're going to build a coalition that allows them to contest for this office.
And I do think he reminds us. I mean, he is a wonderful person. People like to vote for. I mean, I know we can talk about the current president and where we are now. But I think, you know, looking at Georgia for the governor's race, people would like to be able to vote for who they like. Now, in the end, we all come down to relative candidates. And in the last presidential election, we had Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And so you get what you get. But I do think people want to vote for somebody that encourages them and that brings out the best in them.
It's interesting that you talked about how gracefully he made his criticisms, how he did it with love, because that's exactly what this new book is about. It's called Faith. It's a series of essays in which, Julianne, President Carter talks about how much harder it is to reach out and love someone than it is to hate them. And, you know, in the political climate we're living in right now, that is such a spot on comment.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a book we probably all need to read. I agree with everything that Jackie said. I mean, you might not agree with all of Jimmy Carter's policies, but you have to have tremendous respect for him as a leader. And he has overcome some major health issues in the recent years. And just to see him thriving and to see him, like I said, even if you disagree with him, to express his viewpoints with such dignity and grace, I think that you just got to love Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get our second break of the show out of the way. As we do, a couple of tweets. Phil Lunny, who is watching us on Facebook Live, says, what Jim Galloway said about full funding and teacher pay may be critical. The March in Washington speakers were very strong for funding education. Teacher pay should be a good Democratic issue. And Monday's Child tweets us a question that I think we can answer, Jim. wants to know, says, I watched the debate and would like to see it again. Do you know where it's available in its entirety? I think they can go to the Political Insider blog, and it's embedded within the story.
It
that
is,
you
or
published.
Yeah, it is that. You can also go to the 9th District GOP Facebook page, and I believe it's up there.
There you go. If Jim Galloway's bosses hear him directing people away from...
Go to AJC.
He'll be here full-time tomorrow. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
When a Border Patrol agent died last year, President Trump seized on it, saying it was more proof that the U.S. needs a border wall. The FBI investigated and found no evidence of a crime.
I'm sure they were under enormous pressure to try to produce something to fit what the president was saying, but they had to give us that they had nothing.
I'm Elsa Chang, the story behind a death on the border, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 here on GPB.
We have a good tweet from listener Robert Jimison, a former intern here, who says, remember that and we should have all thought about this, the National Prescription Drug Abuse Summit is actually taking place in Atlanta right now. And Clinton is there, Bill Clinton, the Surgeon General, the FDA director, CDC is representative. A lot of people, this is a very important conference on the whole issue of drug abuse, largely opioids at this point. And Mr. Galloway, Kevin Riley, the editor of the AJC, just sent a message saying, tell Galloway I heard that remark. all right, while we're in the area of media, in this case the print media, there was an interesting story that started to be circulated over the weekend, and I realized it rose to attention beyond social media when I started seeing references to it on network news shows. The New York Times moved a major story about it. It has to do with Sinclair Broadcasting. Sinclair is now the largest broadcasting organization in the country. They have an enormous number of television stations around the country, including two here in Georgia. And I've got, they have a Savannah station. The Fox station in Savannah is a Sinclair station. And I think Albany, I had it on a list, but if I'm wrong about that, Albany, please tell me. But I think that's correct. Yeah, Fox 31 in Albany and Channel 28 in Savannah. Jim, they are an organization which has a very definite political point of view, and they have what they call must runs, where they have commentators taping commentaries that each station is required to run, and they're mostly conservative.
And from a script,
yes,
which gets kind of spooky.
Before we even get to that, they have national commentators who do these conservative commentaries, and then the stations are told you must run this one. That's the first step.
Right. And that's highly unusual, especially in local TV, because local TV tries to be as apolitical as possible. I mean, there's a reason why local television doesn't cover politics the way that newspapers or, say, even this radio mm-hmm. station does.
All right. Now we get to the second step of this, and then I'd love to throw it open to everyone. We now know that Sinclair sent a script out to each of their local TV stations, and they actually had a script for the co-anchors, since most TV newscasts are co-anchored, man, woman. And there was a script for what each person was supposed to read. It was mandatory that each of them read it. And here's just a little compilation from stations. You can't see, obviously, the different anchors, but these are anchors from Sinclair stations all over the country.
Biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 This is extremely dangerous to our democracy. This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Those are local Sinclair TV station anchors from all over the country reading that one line from the script. But there's much more to the script than that, of course. It talks about fake news. It talks about social media fake news, but it also goes on to talk about how disturbing it is that many media organizations pick up that and report fake news themselves. And they're not talking about conservative fake news.
No, no. And the one thing you don't want your journalists to be sounding like pod people. I think everybody can agree with it. I'll tell you what, you know what it reminded me, Bill? And I don't know that I've ever mentioned to you. I was with Andy Young once on an early trip to Zimbabwe right after Robert Mugabe took it over. And you're in the whole hotel room, you turn on the TV to watch the news, and you had these BBC-trained people reading something like that, except in the jargon of out and out socialism. That was spooky too, just like this.
What do you all make of this, panelists? What does this tell us about what the state of journalism?
I think this is actually really, really fascinating, because if you look at, and I'm sure you can probably actually post a script or somewhere on the website so people that are interested and want to see the whole, because obviously they didn't say to our democracy over and over again; they said it once. So I think if you look at what the actual words were, which is that there is fake news out there, which I would think we'd say that it's true, that people, especially social media, people, things get picked up and reported on and right, that are not true, and that people should be aware of this, I think that's actually a good message. Now, you can argue about the delivery of the message and whether or not they should be asked to say it, you know, if Howard and I sat here and talked about it, should we do it in that way? But I think actually for our country to have a discussion about what are facts and what are opinions and how do you tell the difference and how do you discuss that as a society, I think it's actually a great conversation.
I don't think that they gave us any guide rails for discussing this. And I guess I wouldn't take as much issue with this particular point. I mean, Sinclair has been in the news behind this merger and a bunch of other stuff for a long time. This to me feels more like the tip of the iceberg, right? There are plenty of other conservative messages that are coming across. But let me get to the point here. I think if you tune into MSNBC, you know you're listening to progressives. If you tune into Fox, you know you're listening to conservatives. If you listen to GPB and NPR, you know, shameless plug, we know we're getting fair and balanced, right? But if you tune into a Sinclair station, you know, hundreds across the country, there are five here in Georgia, Thomasville, Albany, and Macon. So five here in Georgia in three different markets. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know if politics plays a role in local reporting whatsoever. And to parrot, you know, those three dozen Sinclair, you know, news anchors, that is extremely dangerous to our democracy. Like, I just, it'd be one thing if you said, hey, this is my point of view and I'm going to give it to you straight. But that's not what's happening here at all. And that's what the really concerning part is.
I think that no matter what your political belief is, that you can find an echo chamber in a media outlet for yourself. I don't see anything wrong with this announcement. I do, however, have a problem, as Jackie said, with the delivery. I don't think it should have been read by the news anchors. I think it should have been more of maybe a scrolling public service announcement or something like that. But I don't have a problem with the content of it.
Jim, one of the lines, and Jackie's right, there's an entire script here that we can find and post on the website. Some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias. Well, I mean, that's true. But I think we've also all sort of zeroed in on a concern here. These are local TV news anchors. They are presumably there to read the news. And they're, despite the critics out there, considering that most of the news read in a local TV news operation is about an apartment fire, a murder in the middle of the night, it's hyper-local. It's very local. There isn't a great deal of political content in local newscasts. And to have this forced upon you by your bosses in Washington State is, I think, troubling.
And it's interesting that on this panel, I think I'm sensing a little bit of a split here between the journalists in the room and everyone else. And I will tell you that there's nothing that rankles a journalist more than being told what to print and what to say.
That's a great point. Jackie and Julianne for many years, Republicans railed about the Atlanta Journal-Constitution because of its liberal editorial policy, to the point that the AJC doesn't even, well, they don't run editorials anymore. But
not
it was
anyway.
Always,
we still do it, okay.
But it was always, the word is coming down from the liberal publishers of the paper or the owners of the paper. Isn't this the same thing in reverse?
Yeah, well, okay, so I grew up in Georgia. I grew up in Carrollton, Georgia. My father ran twice, and then he lost. And I can tell you from my experience, there are many times when things that were printed in the AJC or other papers that were factually incorrect. And I know that happens in all newspaper outlets. So, you know, so I have a little bit of a different perspective. And again, I think this is a great conversation to have because there are facts that we can talk about. And then on both sides, whether it's MSNBC, right, or whether it's Fox News, there are clearly people that have their opinions. And so I think it's good for us to have this discussion and for us to understand as a community, you know, which of those two are really true. And if you have an underlying background and framework, if you really believe that the Second Amendment is the most important part about the gun control, then you're going to have a different perspective than someone that believes that safety is. And I think we all need to understand that and understand that our backgrounds and our frameworks actually influence how we look at things.
If we were looking at the editorial pages, this is a local news station that tells you, like you said, Bill, about, you know, cats getting stuck in trees and fires in apartment buildings and what happened at the local grocery store. This is not a platform for espousing your political views per se. And if you want to make it that, then let's at least label it as such, right? We've got requirements on internet advertising that have to say, this is an ad, this is not content. And I think the same thing applies in this particular scenario.
Right. We are running out of time, but I do want to point out, Julianne, that Sinclair, remember that Jared Kushner during the campaign, it was revealed, made a deal with Sinclair. They said they would treat President Trump favorably in their coverage, presumably in the hope that the president, if he were elected, would treat their business dealings favorably in the media world. And he has done that.
Well, certainly, I don't agree with that. But I certainly believe that any station has the right to run some sort of public service announcement where they're saying, if you feel that our coverage is unbalanced.
Absolutely. I think that's really a good thing.
And I disagree that local news is always just general in nature. I mean, on a local station here, and I believe that they've actually done away with the Just a Minute, but that got very political.
Yes, it certainly did. All right, that was all right. Julianne Thompson, you win today's toaster oven for getting the last word of the show. We are completely out of time, so thank you, Julianne. Thank you, Jackie Cushman, Howard Franklin, Jim Galloway. Quick note. We're not going to do a live show talking about general political news on Wednesday because that's the 50th anniversary, sadly, of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So what we're going to do instead is we have an hour conversation with Andrew Young, who was at Dr. King's side throughout the civil rights campaigns and was with him when he was murdered. So we'll be bringing that show to you at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. I hope you'll join us for that. I'm Bill Nygut. See you again for Political Rewind Wednesday at 2:00.